Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go. It's hour two. It's Wednesday, live in L.A. It's the Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1, the Herd brought to you by Jersey Mike Subs. Be a sub above. I'm a little swollen on this side of my face this morning because I went to the dentist. And I have the world's best dentist. He's got more equipment than anybody in the world. It's just, he's got everything but jet skis in his office. He's got lasers. He gave me the shot to numb my mouth, and they have this thing that shakes my face while he does it so I can't feel it. He's the world's best dentist, and I'm never going to say who it is. He's so good.
Shakes your face.
Yeah, so what he does is, you know when you get those shots and they...
Yeah, the Novocaine.
Novocaine. He's got this thing that moves your face so you can't feel it. And all of a sudden he looks up and he said, I'll be back in 15 minutes. And I was just like...
I always ask for an extra shot.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, I know you gave me like four of them, but just one more. Just to be sure.
I do that at a bar. Always ask for one more shot.
Yeah, I can't. Yeah. I can't. The way that my age and body is set up, the shots are not for me anymore. But yeah, no, that's... I just did that, what you did like 2 months ago.
Only bad thing about my dentist is when he drills, and they did drilling yesterday. This was like, they call this in Oklahoma fracking. That's what they did in my mouth. I could smell. When you can smell your teeth being carved up.
And you can still feel the pressure of the drill. Yeah. I had the same thing done. I had a root canal a million years ago, and they just like stuck it in there because you're supposed to be able to pop the cap off.
Can't.
Nope. So you had to drill the whole tooth down, and you're just sitting there like...
People don't understand. Can I just say this? Of course I can. You don't understand how good our medical community is. So in the last year and a half, I had to have my teeth rearranged. Mm-hmm. I had a pulmonary embolism, and then we had some other stuff I had to deal with. I banged my head, right, and they passed out. In all three instances... The medical professionals I dealt with are so patient and so compassionate and so amazing, and yet we think talk show hosts should be called doctor and we don't listen to epidemiologists.
Yeah, they're pretty smart. They're pretty good at what they do.
Every time I deal with medical professionals, I'm just like, these people are...
We're complaining about like being completely numbed in a comfortable chair, being drilled, like having our teeth fixed so that they don't rot out of our heads. It's like, it's pretty nice.
I don't know. I would have been annoyed with me yesterday. Like, I was sitting there and I kept asking questions, and his what are they called?
You're talking while they're doing stuff in your mouth?
Well, no, before I said, he goes, are you anxious?
Oh.
And I'm like, even though I'm a finely tuned athlete, very alpha, a little, because I know I was going under 2 hours of a crane and drilling, and he was just, his dentist side manner, bedside manner, was just, it was so good. He's like, no, we're going to do... And he kept talking his way through everything. And I'm just like, God, you're really good at what you do. Now, as am I. So it was a couple of real pros. A couple of real pros there. But I was just like, God, these people are... Our medical professionals,
yeah,
I love
great.
All of you. You're amazing. And don't listen to Crazy Town on the internet.
Yeah, we don't deserve you, but we appreciate you.
All right. Speaking of a teaching moment, let's bring Joel Klatt on the show, the voice of college football. I love having him on. He's got Iowa State at Oklahoma this week. By the way, at Fox, we only air great games. We're the only network. It's almost like wrestling. We know the outcome before.
And that's right.
We only do great games, Baylor, Oklahoma. That's right. So I'm gonna throw a theory at you, and you just answer it.
Great.
Now, you know... I don't like non-Power 5 teams.
That's true, and I'm actually with you on that one. I'm an elitist as well.
Okay.
Unfortunately.
But this is a little different year.
Okay.
That we have one great team, Georgia.
Yes.
And then we got about 7-8. I'm like, depends on the Saturday.
Yeah.
I like Michigan. I think Oklahoma State's underrated, but I like... And so in a year, I thought about this driving in today with my swollen cheek. I thought, this is a year... let Cincinnati in. We don't have... If Bama was great, if Ohio State I thought was great...
Let them eat cake?
Is this year? Let them eat cake. But you know what? This year, there's cake. There's enough cake for a non-Power 5. And I think they did beat Notre Dame.
They did.
Let them in if they go undefeated.
And remember, Notre Dame has not lost much in South Bend over the last few years. Not even Clemson could go up there and beat them. I believe that the last game that they had lost in South Bend was Georgia.
By a point.
So it's tough to win there, and they went in there and did that. They beat a Notre Dame team that I don't know if Notre Dame is as strong as those previous seasons.
They're not.
but
they beat them.
They beat them
there,
and that needs to matter. I don't mind your theory. I think that at this point there is a pretty plausible road to the playoff for a lot of teams, more so than normal.
Yeah.
Than previous years at this stage in the season. I think that there's a plausible road for Cincinnati. That's pretty obvious.
Yeah.
Obviously, the four teams that are already in there. Obviously, plausible for Michigan State and Michigan. I think that you could see a scenario where Oklahoma State goes in.
Yeah.
There's a scenario where Wake Forest
works. No, come on.
I'm just
now,
telling
Claire,
you. I'm
so
just telling
good.
You. I'm just telling you. There's still a plausible road for Oklahoma, even as far down as they fell. Just because of this fact, Alabama is all or nothing at this point, I believe. Now, we haven't for sure seen what the committee will do with a potentially two-loss Alabama team. But in my estimation, a two-loss Alabama team, a non-SEC champ Alabama team, would be left out of the playoff.
I totally agree this
year. So that means that they either have to run the table,
or they're out.
Arkansas, Auburn, and Georgia, or they're out.
I totally agree.
So it's all or nothing. They're either going to be the number one seed, and Georgia will be three, or they're going to be out.
That's right.
The Big Ten champ, as long as there's only a one-loss Big Ten champ, right? So if Ohio State's that one-loss Big Ten, or Michigan, or Michigan State,
right,
they'll occupy a spot.
Okay.
So then it comes down to, does Oregon beat Utah twice? See, so basically there's two spots open.
That's right.
There is a really plausible road for Cincinnati if they're able to beat SMU and go on and
Oregon,
win their conference championship.
Oregon lost to Stanford. I don't want to hear belly aching.
Well, and they're going to have to beat Utah twice.
All right.
So let's
go to my second thing.
Let's see. Let's hear it.
Okay. So when you go to college, a fine university like Michigan or Michigan State,
okay,
it's not just your GPA. Hmm. It is not just your test score. It is, what did you overcome? Did you have a summer job? Was it an easy road?
You're saying for admission.
For anybody. Anybody on a great college campus. It is not just, she had the highest GPA, she gets in. Well, if she went to a prep school and she had, we consider, there's nuance to admissions.
Okay.
Okay. We know that. There's nuance. So when Michigan State beats Michigan, I hear a lot of this from Sparty fan base. And they love me, by the way. But I hear this from them. Well, we beat them. And I'm like, time out. It's the best loss in the country this year was Michigan's loss to Michigan State. It's to a rival. It's on the road. You were rolling them in the second half, and statistically, you dominated them, and you lost. But Michigan State got so high for its rival, the next week, they get rolled by Purdue. And that the head-to-head matters, but when it was as good a loss, I have no problem Michigan being a slot, an inch ahead of Michigan State. We can't.
I think that's crazy.
It can't all be GPA. Otherwise, what about kids that come from tougher families? How do they get into school?
Yeah, but you're conflating something that does have nuance to something that doesn't, which is a scoreboard and 60 minutes in which you play the game, and there's a winner and a loser. So you're talking about admissions in terms of a subjective criteria across thousands of applicants in which some percentage will get accepted and some will not. That's not what the sports world is. The sports world is a game, and there's a winner and a loser. There is black and white. So I hear this, and Gary Barta, the AD of Iowa, who's the chair of the playoff committee, said this a night ago. He said, you know, watching the game aside, statistically, Michigan is just far superior to Michigan State. But here's what all of you elitists fail to realize, is that all of these statistics and this analysis is only projecting who could win the game or who would win the game. In this case, we have an actual winner and a loser.
But it's not
so I don't care how it happened or what statistically is happening.
You don't care.
They have the same record. They played on a field. Michigan State won.
Yeah. One team doesn't have a humiliating loss.
This notion is an interesting notion. I would
scoreboard.
I would argue that this happens far more often than you would think. Remember, Purdue got Iowa the week after the big emotional Penn State win. Bang, gets Iowa the next week. Purdue gets Michigan State the week after a big emotional win against Michigan. Bang. Remember Iowa a few years ago. Ohio State had beaten Penn State in an unbelievable game. Saquon Barkley took back the opening kick. They come all the way back. JT Barrett. Ohio State wins next week. They go out to Iowa. Bang. They get beat by like 30 points. It happens, right? So I'm not going to fault Michigan State and say Michigan is better than you because some of statistical analysis. I saw the stats. It was the scoreboard where Michigan State won.
All right. Third topic. So this is maybe it was always like this. And I'm just, this is recency bias, but it does feel like we live in a world now, and I think a lot of this is based on social media, where there are these avalanches and momentum starts, and you find very competent people fighting for their life or their job or their reputation or their legacy. So y'all wanted Brian Kelly out, not you. He's the best hire since Lou Holtz. I could argue since Eric Parsegian. Y'all wanted Harbaugh out. Oh, he's going to win his 10th. He's going to have his fourth 10-win season. Today, y'all want Sark out. Like, Saban lost to Louisiana Monroe his first year.
He did.
The first year I did the show, I couldn't get my hair right. You're building a culture.
I remember that.
Remember the set? The set was I sat here, and the peasant sat somewhere on the floor. Okay,
You did.
I couldn't
you had
get
the
my
pedestal,
hair in
the
set The
hair
right.
was an issue.
Okay, so today.
Now it's better. You found the recipe.
Look at this thing. It's like a perfect helmet. So today, Chris Del Conte, who's a great, probably the best AD in the country, you'd argue.
He's pretty good.
He said, listen, I'm not making excuses. But he came out and he said, 52% of our 2018 class and almost 50% of our 2019 class, they're no longer here. This is a rebuild.
Yes. And
I'm defending Sark. You want to run him off. All these guys you want to run off are doing pretty well.
You are big into analogies. Let me make one for the Texas situation and Steve Sarkisian. And before I make the analogy, I would state, I think Steve's a remarkable coach. He's a very good coach. Everywhere he's been, he succeeded outside of a small point in time in which he was having massive personal issues, which he has admitted and faced head on.
Yeah.
Everywhere else he's been, he has succeeded and done so on a pretty good scale, in particular at Washington when he took over a team that was 0-12 and built them into the team that – Peterson then took to the playoff.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's the analogy. If you're searching for a home, everyone talks about move-in ready, and you want to go and you want to buy a home that's move-in ready, right? And so you go and you'll see one house, and maybe it's a spec home, and this builder poured his heart and soul into it, maybe overbuilt it a little bit, but man, I tell you what, the quality is really good. And there's that home. And then there's this other home that you're trying to build or trying to buy, and that one's more of a flip. It wasn't a tear down. It wasn't a spec home. It was a flip. And it looks nice, and it's probably a little bit cheaper and maybe fits in your budget, but then you start looking closely. And it's not built correctly, and you realize that you're going to have to go in and you're going to have to take it down to the studs because they didn't do the wiring right, the plumbing is not right, and it might look good from the outside, but you get in there and you realize the problems go way deeper than what looks like on the walls, right? The cover of the book does not give you a good indication of what the book is. That's what Texas was. So Texas, from the outside looking in, was like, boy, they were a couple of snaps away from being an undefeated team, and boy, they've recruited really well. And then you go in there and you actually look what was under the hood, and you look what was going on with the boosters, and you look what was leaving their program as far as graduation, like their quarterback Sam Ellinger, and the guys that they were having to run off in order to build back this culture
That's
of
right.
what he wants. And you have to understand, he had to go way deeper before he's going to build back up. This is one of those areas. I know no one likes five losses at Texas. I get it. And this is a program that should be great and will be great. But there's an element here of that you got to tear it way back down to the studs in order to build something back up that has staying power, that's going to be great at the top end, rather than window dressing and Band-Aids.
Hey, by the way, and I'll throw another one out there. It's not a big program, but Chip Kelly, they all want to run him out of UCLA. They're now bowl eligible. When Chip Kelly came to UCLA, to your point, he had to so rebuild UCLA, they got down to 55 scholarship players.
That's right.
And beat USC that had 85 in a game in which he played 13 freshmen. He had to literally just start over.
Sometimes you've got to decimate the program in order to build it back in the right fashion.
And the problem is Texas has a 2-3 year rebuild image. They may be a longer rebuild than that.
Well, They do fall into the category that at any given moment, you're 3 years away from a playoff berth.
Okay, that's fair.
Because of the recruiting base, because it's such a rich recruiting base.
Right.
I think that it will turn around at some point, but you made a great point. Even Nick Saban lost to Louisiana Monroe his first year at Alabama.
And then second year got rolled by Utah in the Sugar Bowl.
And then the third year he goes on to win a national championship.
All right, let me throw this at you, Klatt. Right now, I like what we did.
So there's a lot of agreeing going on.
Okay, hold on.
It's very cordial right now. Joy is I think that you like this. Do you like it when there's more?
Yeah, okay. When two minds get together and you're on the same page, that's
fine. Bernie Sanders and Elon Musk may disagree mostly, but you see this week, but they may have something they agree on occasionally. All right. So I can't figure out Bitcoin. That's another show.
Which one of you is Bernie and which one is Elon?
please, God, I'm Elon.
Probably. All right. Let me throw one more thing I want to hit here. Okay, here it is. So I hear a lot of things about what is a great job.
Yeah. Coaching, you mean?
Miami, that is a great job. And I think to myself, well, you haven't been good in 20 years. A bunch of coaches that have won everywhere are going there, and they're all failing quickly. And I don't think the administration's all in. And I hear this about USC. And I do think USC is better than Miami. But in the history of USC, McKay was good, left for the NFL. Robinson, good, left for the NFL. Pete Carroll, good, left for the NFL. It's not one of these paternal Bobby Bowden guy stay forever job. It feels very transient to me. So I just want you to tell me, if Alabama's a 10 as the best job in the country and whoever's number one, where is Miami and USC right now in your eyes? Administration, money, commitment, conference, everything.
I would put USC very close to the top. I think it's a top five job in college football.
Wow.
Miami, maybe a top 20 job. Maybe. Maybe. It's really difficult in Miami because I think that the competition in your recruiting footprint is more difficult. And you don't even play on campus. They don't have what they used to have with the old Orange Bowl, which was their identity.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a bad stadium, but it's our bad stadium.
I liked it.
And we played them there in 2005, the John Beeson, Merriweather team. Like
it fit their program
100%, and it was difficult to play there. Very difficult to play there. Now, you know, you go and it's like, is it filled up? Kind of, maybe. I think that they've lost kind of the tackiness to their history through that stadium.
That's a good
way to put it. That's tough to overcome. Whereas USC, I still believe that USC, because of their recruiting footprint and because of the fact that if they are good, they own this coast.
They do.
The entire coast. You can't say that about Miami. You can't even say if they're good that they own their state. Right, because of Florida and Florida State and what goes on there. And by the way, UCF is about to be a quote-unquote Power 5 school in the Big 12. So I would put USC near the top, in the top five in the country. Miami might be a top 20 job. I'm not sure.
All right, one more thing. The state of Oklahoma thinks I don't like them, and I'll say it again. Oklahoma State's the most underrated team in the country because we're paying attention to Cincinnati and Notre Dame. We're not paying attention to Oklahoma State, just my take.
They're pretty good.
They're pretty good. So I think Iowa State's going to beat Oklahoma this weekend.
Wow.
That's my takeaway. But a bigger issue is the future of the program. Lincoln Riley, rumors to LSU. I don't buy him at all. Am I naive?
I don't think you're naive. I don't buy them either. I know Lincoln fairly well in terms of, you know, broadcaster-coach relationship. I've done a lot of his games. He is a loyal guy. He is a guy that understands that this opportunity was given to him, and maybe he deserved it, maybe he didn't, when Bob stepped down and all of a sudden he's the head coach of the Oklahoma Sooners. This is one of the most storied and prestigious programs in the history of college football. I think that he feels an obligation to get them back to a point where they're winning national championships. I think Bob is still one of his great mentors, and Bob turned down opportunity after opportunity over the 20 years that he was at Oklahoma, and I think Lincoln will probably do the same. You go to LSU, what does that move do to you except start your clock to get fired, which is what every coach there has gotten, which is fired whether they won a national title or not. At Oklahoma, this is a program where you can win a national title and you can be there for 20 years. You can be the paterno Bowden style coach at Oklahoma. I don't think you can do that at LSU.
No, I think LSU is a pressure cooker. Also, you know how the Pittsburgh Steelers have a reputation is they've only had like three coaches or something, you know? And Chuck Knoll, Bill Cowher, and Tomlin. Oklahoma's a little bit like that.
A bit.
Bud Wilkerson, Barry Switzer, Stoops, Lincoln Riley. Now, they had John Blake for about an hour.
That's right.
Very quick. He was a great recruiter.
I think Fairbanks for about 30 minutes as well, if I'm not mistaken.
But by and large, Oklahoma is loyal to their coaches. They give you down years. It's a top five program. Why in the world would I? That's a classic example of people don't try to get happier than happy. If you coach Oklahoma, unless you go to the pros, there's no other job you should take.
Not if it fits, and it certainly fits there. I mean, Lincoln.
A lot of land there. You can get a big horse farm, ostrich farm. I mean, it's all you. L.A., you get a little cheap, condo, and it costs you about $9
million. Cheap real estate. Yeah, there
you Oklahoma, all these coaches in Oklahoma, they have these beautiful ranches. It's beautiful out there.
I'd like a ranch. That would be nice.
Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah, like a Yellowstone ranch.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be
Can
nice.
Can you see me on horses?
No,
in
I can't actually
West,
at all.
Out there literally making
no,
things happen.
I can't at all,
steering
actually.
Steering cattle
the
into the field.
The last thing I think of when I think Colin Cowherd is every man.
You know, I take these shots with a smile.
I mean, you said your dentist was, like, even you were annoyed with you in the dentist chair.
I put on working gloves. Well, I moved them from one end of the garage to the other, but I have touched working gloves on more than one occasion. All right.
I look at them longingly and think to myself,
what could be?
What could be?
All right. Iowa State, Oklahoma. We only put great games on. I'm taking the Cyclones, who are a little better defensively. You don't think of Iowa State as having NFL defensive guys on the front. I think they have a couple interesting players.
Yeah, Mike Rose is an interesting guy, and they've had success in the past against this Oklahoma team. So
there you go. Good seeing you, buddy.
One more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
First ever National Check Your Wipers Day is coming up November 16th. Enter for a chance to win a Michelin New York City experience for two. No purchase necessary. Visit wipersday.com for more information. True story. I just read this on the interweb that Matt Stafford, Ram quarterback, his wife, Kelly, threw a pretzel at a fan during the Rams-Niners game. She called it a weak moment. I would say weak. But, you know, I've learned something over time about myself. I've said this to people before. I've never listened in my life to sports radio and been mad at another host's opinion. I've disagreed with it, but I don't go into the experience seeking validation. I just want to be entertained. When I turn on the radio, you can be wrong on everything. If you're entertaining, I'll listen. I got a 15-minute drive home. Just entertain me. I'm not expecting much. And but people, you'll see, you know, on Twitter, and I used to get calls when I took him. People get all worked up. I think about this all the time. I love analyzing sports. I don't get overly emotional about it. And when I hear stories like that a wife who's been in the league 15 years throws a pretzel at a fan, I'm like, am I missing out on something? Is it more fun to get so into sports that you throw stuff at people? Maybe it's a better experience than mine, which is I just sit back, watch it, take notes, and analyze it. You know, like, is it better to just be a golfer and enjoy it or be a golf pro and get paid, but it's your job? I guess my point is maybe I'm too analytical on it because I don't watch games and get overly emotional.
Well,
I'm not saying I should throw pretzels at people.
I mean, I can speak to this because my brother played.
And now you're
for 15
journalist.
Years.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I also, most of his career, social media wasn't a big thing. Like basically all of his career.
Right, right.
And fans at games are crazy. I mean, we see videos all the time. And no way am I excusing this behavior. It should never happen. 0%. Like I've had hot dogs thrown at me. Do you know how much I hate hot dogs, Colin?
Yeah.
I hate hot dogs.
Yeah.
I've had them thrown at me by fans. And I did nothing. And I'm happy to get into an altercation. Not happy, but I'm not afraid to get in an altercation.
So sometimes I feel like, I not to waste time, but I've thought about this for years. I've moved around the country for my job. So I don't have a hometown necessarily. Now, it's been great for me and the family.
Right.
There's a lot of advantages. Or I could have just stayed in my hometown, done local radio in my little Iowa City, and had literally been a softball team at my age with my best friends in high school and maybe college or broadcasting school and never moved. And that's a very fun experience. Am I missing out on going to 20-year reunions and having the time of my life when I don't feel like I have a hometown? I feel like America is my hometown. I've lived everywhere.
Well, that's nice.
Well, I mean, I'm you know, very patriotic.
I think different. Everyone has a different experience.
I just can't,
and goals.
I can't see myself throwing a pretzel at something.
You have a different emotional attachment to if Liv was playing in the game, if your daughter was playing.
Oh,
in the game,
I'd throw a pot
You would
roast.
Have a different emotional attachment to what's going on. That said, because you have that, and because you are an extension of a representation of one of the players, or the team in some senses. You have a higher level of responsibility to behave yourself at these games.
Yeah, I agree on that. She shouldn't be throwing food at people.
It's unacceptable.
That's right.
You can't do it.
Can't do it. Joy with the news.
No. Turn on the news. This is the Herdline News.
I would be the best.
Sponsored by Mercedes-Benz.
Yeah,
the best or
If nothing. I did stay in Iowa City, though, I would be crushing it.
you would crush Iowa City.
Yeah, like
yes.
I would literally be like, I'd walk down the street
to
Iowa
statue.
City.
There would definitely be Colin Cowherd Lane in Iowa City if you were there. If I touched hot dogs, which I don't do, I would have thrown it back. But I don't believe in touching hot dogs. They're disgusting. So Russell Wilson has said on multiple occasions that he wants to play into his 40s. That's the thing now for quarterbacks. We have extended the runway for quarterbacks well past what it used to be. And yesterday he reaffirmed that notion, speaking about his future plans. He said, I was wildly crazy about the game, but I'm ridiculously obsessed with it. That's why I want to play 20 plus years. At the same time, you have to have drive. I think that's such a critical part. I definitely want to play for a long time, but I think once I'm done, I'd love to own an NFL football team and be able to impact a city, a country, and just bring people to the game of football.
Yeah, I mean, he's the classic LeBron Brady. It's more than just a game. It's a lifestyle, and I think he has every Brady, LeBron, and Russell Wilson to me have always been, they're the three athletes I think of that are just more committed. Like, even beyond, like, I mean, I know Aaron Rodgers is committed and love the game, but I think, like, Russell's obsessed, Brady's obsessed, LeBron, they're, like, obsessed with it.
They're obsessed, and it shows in their overall brand.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Things that they reach out into, things that they do, are kind of an extension of football or sports or their lifestyle in some way. It's not like they're randomly waking up and, you know, they're doing something completely outlandish, like he's all of a sudden really heavy into pottery or something.
Yeah.
Like he's consistent with everything it is with his brand, and LeBron
I hope
is
he does, by the way,
and so is Brady.
You and I like good football. When Russell plays, it's interesting good football. Let's take away last weekend. I hope he plays. There's some guys tomorrow, I'd be good with it.
He's in his 10th NFL season. It's not like he has a lot of more football to play. He's already a minority owner in Seattle's MLS franchise, the Sounders.
Yeah.
And only two former NFL players have owned a team. So that's Jerry Richardson with the Panthers, former NFL players, and George Halas with the Bears, who owned while he played. So I could see Russ being an owner of a team one day.
Well, I mean, Michael Jordan, when you get the players now, they have generational kind of money. Magic Johnson's got some money in the Dodgers, and Michael Jordan, and absolutely.
I think there's a value to having former players as owners as well. They see the game differently. Obviously, you know, Michael hasn't had the kind of success comparison to his playing career. But it's not like I look at that organization as a poorly run organization, and now they have LaMelo, and they're fun and interesting, and sometimes it just takes time to build things.
It's hard to find the guy.
Not a lot of guys.
There's not a lot.
Like, we think everybody's the guy until we find out they're not.
Atlanta went Dominique Wilkins and Trae Young, about 30 years. Dominique was the guy, and there were good players, and now you found the next guy, and it took you 30 years. Atlanta's always been a good NBA city. Always been.
Yeah, it's not. Just because you haven't found a superstar doesn't mean that your organization is dysfunctional.
Denver's still looking for Elway. Miami's still looking for Marino.
Stuff's
hard.
Great fan bases. Yeah, it's not that easy.
That's why the Packers, Bart Starr, Brett Favre, and Aaron Rodgers. That's not the way it works. It doesn't work that way.
No, and then they tried it with Jordan Love, and it's just a good reminder that that's not how it works.
That's a good point.
The Seahawks host the Cardinals on Sunday and are currently 2-point underdogs, according to Fox Bet. Obviously, they're still waiting to find out what's going on with Kyler Murray. So Odell played his first game on Monday night with the Rams, and Troy Aikman thinks that the wide receiver is already having an impact on his new quarterback.
Matthew now feels some of the pressure that maybe Baker Mayfield felt, and I've got to somehow find a way to get the ball into his hands, because that's why he's playing on this play, and it's not good, and it's not good playing quarterback when you feel pressure to get the ball to any one particular player. It just doesn't work.
I am firmly with you on your opinion on this. It's not Odell's fault. First of all, Odell plays a dependent position.
That's a good way to put it.
So
he needs
the burden of responsibility from the gate lies with whoever is distributing the football to him. That's where the evaluation has to begin, because he plays a dependent position. You have to look first. Did the quarterback make the right read? Is the throw correct? Is he covered? Did the quarterback need to see that? It's on the quarterback first. Once the quarterback is completely absolved of all responsibility in this particular throw, on this particular play, then we can evaluate, was Odell in the right spot? Did he run the right route? All of that stuff comes second. Because he plays a dependent position. He only played 15 snaps. The Rams got rolled. And they got rolled the week before when Odell wasn't there.
The story of the game and the story of the Rams for the last 2 to 3 weeks is they've gotten too finesse. They're too pretty.
It's also their defense is struggling. Yeah. If you play a physical team, and you can be physical on offense as well and run the ball, there's nothing they can do about it. The Rams have serious things that they need to look at here.
Absolutely. And they also, and we could acknowledge this, they are top heavy. So the Cowboys were top heavy, I thought, about a year ago. I said this over and over. And then they nailed 4 draft picks in 2 years, and they're stars. So the Rams have done very well in the draft. 14 of their 22 starters are in the draft. But outside of, like, Aaron Donald, most of their stars are not drafted. They've gone and gotten Ramsey and got Whitworth and got Stafford and get... Now, Cooper Kupp is obviously a star. But the Rams, and we've talked about this, they've already lost a receiver and they've lost a running back, and they were good. They're not a terribly deep team.
Right.
So, you know, like, they're another injury away from me just canceling them as a Super Bowl team this year. I still think they got a shot, but Arizona's got more depth. I think Green Bay's got more depth. I think Dallas has more depth. I think Tampa has more depth. Rams, and we know this, when you're paying Goff and Stafford's contract, and you're paying Whitworth, and you're paying Donald, and you're paying Ramsey, you're not going to have a ton of depth. So the Rams are perilously close from this thing unraveling. As of right now, they just need a tweak and an adjustment.
And when you look at the Packers have a Super Bowl winning quarterback. When you look at the Bucks, they have Tom Brady, and they won a Super Bowl last year. When you start to get into those spaces where you're losing guys and it's starting to become things we have to make adjustments for, have you been there before? Do you know how to overcome these things? Obviously, the Rams were in a Super Bowl, but we know how that went as well. So, and they did that with a different quarterback. Like, for all this talk about, you know, Stafford having to connect with OBJ, the beginning of this year, so I've been consistent from the beginning. The pressure's on Matthew Stafford.
Yeah.
You traded away Jared Goff, who obviously looks terrible, but you made a big move. All we've heard about your entire career is how it's Detroit's fault. Well, now you're with the LA Rams, a well-run organization who's been completely aggressive, who have gone all in on winning a Super Bowl, and you have Sean McVay. So the excuses are gone. Yeah. And I don't want to hear about injuries because everyone's dealing with injuries at this point.
Yeah.
But it's not Odell's fault. So Giannis has said for a long time he wants to stay in Milwaukee. He's not been quiet about his love for Milwaukee. But in a recent interview with GQ, he hinted there's a possibility that he could leave in the future and embrace a new challenge somewhere else. He said one challenge was to bring a championship here, and we did. What's the next challenge? The next challenge might not be here. Me and my family chose to stay in the city that we all love and has taken care of us. In 2 years, that might change. I'm being totally honest with you. I'm always honest.
But I love this, that his first goal, by the way, LeBron's first goal was to win in Cleveland.
Correct.
That's why when he left, he felt guilt, came back and won.
Right.
But if LeBron won in Cleveland, he doesn't make the Miami move. Or if he does, he stays there.
He stays there, yeah.
So it's like, I love this part, and I do think they're going to win it again, although Golden State's now really interesting. But I think Milwaukee would understand. If he won another title in the next 3 years, or 2 or 3 years, and he left, come on. You could not. You'd be like, I always said this. If LeBron wins in Cleveland before he leaves, if you look at Cleveland Cavaliers history, he over-delivers. He's over-delivered for Milwaukee.
Over-delivered leaving and going to Miami and coming back and winning a championship there. They were a disaster when he was...
Both times, when he left, a disaster.
Yeah, that's how it goes. Now, he did sign a 5-year extension in December of 2020. They host the Lakers tonight. They're currently 9-point favorites, according to Fox Bet. I think this also, and this might be strategic, although Giannis is a very authentic person. I don't think he's very, you know, into like manipulating the media or anything, but it does keep pressure on the organization in some ways. Like, hey, I did win a championship. I brought the first championship here to Milwaukee in 50 years. That was a challenge, and we did it. Let's not get too comfortable. Let's not start forgetting who stayed here and brought the championship here.
A lot of people, I would say 99% of Americans, are content with success. Russell Wilson doesn't feel like that. Brady doesn't feel like that. LeBron doesn't feel like that. Giannis doesn't. Giannis is giving you a peek into his soul, which is, I like challenges. Stuff's now, I get bored with easy.
And I don't think he's saying that it's going to be easy now to win championships in Milwaukee. But I do think that this, whether he was being strategic or not, does keep pressure on the organization. Like, hey, don't get like comfortable that you won one and now you're good for the next 50 years. Like, I want to do a lot in my career. And if you're not going to keep at the same pace that I am, which I think is fair for players to do.
Yeah. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News. Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Hey, it's Ben, host of The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller, along with my trusty sidekick, David Gascon. Would mean a lot to have you join us on our weekly auditory journey. You're asking, what in God's name is The Fifth Hour? I'll tell you, it's a spinoff of The Ben Maller Show, a cult hit overnights on FSR. Why should you listen? Picture, if you will, a world where we chat with captains of industry in media, sports, and more every week, explore some amazing facts about human nature and more. Listen to The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Don't miss your chance to win $25,000 tonight on the Fox Bet Super 6 app, where players have won over $5.5 million. Scan the QR code, download the app, and pick the outcomes of six NBA games for your chance to win. It's free to play.
So I was thinking about this during the break. Joe Flacco is starting this week for the Jets. And I said to the staff, are the Jets the worst American pro sports franchise? And somebody said, no, Lions. I'm like, yeah, you're right, the Lions. It was the Browns until about 2 years ago. And this is what's amazing. In the NFL, nobody should be as bad as the Lions or the Jets or Cleveland for 20 years. It is total incompetency. I'll give you an example. In baseball, if you're terrible, you have an excuse. There's no salary cap. We just can't buy the players like the Dodgers or Yankees or Red Sox. We just can't afford them. Well, okay, there should be a hierarchy. It's like in England. You're born into a royal family, right? Like the Yankees are the royal family, the Dodgers. So if your cable deal or your Dodgers are just well-run, they have all this money. I mean, they can go out and just get a Trey Turner and a Max Scherzer. And some organizations like Pittsburgh couldn't afford one of them. Okay, so in baseball, there's an explanation for being, I mean, generationally weak. Basketball, same thing. You really need two elite players to be consistently really good. And we know a lot of the stars want to play in a handful of cities. And we also know that, I mean, so free agency, Milwaukee's never going to get a star in free agency. You have to draft them. We also know that there's only two rounds of the NBA draft. And historically, after about the 15th pick, you're out of players. There's just not that many great basketball players. But in football, it's different. There's seven rounds of talent. And then half the league is undrafted. There is a tight salary cap with almost no exceptions. So even if you're great, you just can't keep people. And it's a very mobile sport in terms of coaching. I mean, you have so many coaches per staff, more than baseball or football, that if you get a great coordinator, oh, he'll go get a college job, a pro job. You can't keep your staff. So it's hard to keep Josh McDaniels being in New England this good for that long. You've got to massively overpay him. And he already left once and almost left twice, right? He left the Denver, he almost went to Indy, and then he came back. There's every reason in the world to be decent in the NFL. You don't even have to draft well. Half the damn league is undrafted. If you get a really good quarterback, you keep him for like 12 years. I mean, these guys now are playing. I mean, Russell Wilson's like, I run around and get hit. I still got to play into my mid-40s. Players are lasting longer. In football, they don't hit anymore at practice. Starters don't play in the preseason games. Rosters by the end of the year last year are healthier than ever. I mean, Tampa had every player except like one. So there's to be horrible in football, you have to be so poorly owned and so poorly run for so long. There is no excuse. There's an excuse for the Pittsburgh Pirates. There's an excuse for the Sacramento Kings or Memphis. There's no excuse. I was joking during the break. To be as bad as the Lions have been in the NFL, that would be like living in a socialist country and being broke. The whole system's built to, like, they'll pay for your college, they'll pay for your medical care, they'll pay for half your rent. Socialism is like, we want everybody to have at least a decent quality of life. Like a decent quality. If you're broke in America, I get it. It's expensive, we're run by capitalists, there's a lot of laws that don't help poor people, I get it. But it's like, how are you this bad in the NFL for this long? There's no excuse, it has to be ownership. There's just no excuse. I mean, if you watched that Lions-Steelers game, Pittsburgh basically said, here's the game, you can have it. Detroit still couldn't win it. God, I got a backup quarterback. I fumbled twice. You get great field position. You've got an expensive quarterback. I've got a backup. I'm not trying to pick on the Lions here, but like to be as bad as Cleveland was for 20 years,
And it's not even like there other sports organizations in that city are not that dysfunctional.
Pistons are pretty weak. The colleges are good.
I mean, they've been able to put together some, I mean, some at least interesting games. I wouldn't describe them as completely dysfunctional.
I can't. I mean, this all started with Flacco starting for the Jets. I get to a point where I do feel sometimes, I feel sympathy for fans. I think sometimes they almost feel like they're held hostage by bad ownership groups. Like the end
almost, of
the last 10 years of Al Davis, it was like they were just doing crazy stuff. Like I knew people that cover the team and they're like, it's like, this isn't even pro football. I feel, but that's it. No excuse to be this bad this long in the NFL. No excuse. All right, hour three, Kenny Young, former Ram Denver Bronco linebacker, is going to be joining us. The Herd.